Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Yeah, can I have a number three with cheese and a large coffee?
Wolfing down your lunch. Serving up today's top sports stories with Wolf and Luke.
Man, does it smell good.
As noon on a Monday, it is time for Wolfing Down Your Lunch. Rick is here. Rick, what's going on?
What's up, guys?
What Everything. Up, Rick?
The Timberwolves set the tone in Game 1 as they beat the Suns 120-95 to kick off the best-of-seven series. Here's Frank Vogel after the game.
Now, we knew all week that this team is far better than the team we saw in the head-to-head matchups in the regular season. You know, I mean, it's a 56-win team with Cat missing 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever he missed. So, I mean, you know, really a 60-win caliber team that we're playing against. You know, so, you know, we knew they were going to play better. We hoped to have played better in Game 1, but we got to make a response in Game 2.
Our Sanderson Ford poll question is up now at ArizonaSports.com, and it asks, what was most concerning about the Suns' Game 1 loss? Edwards' third quarter, rebounding, Grayson Allen's injury, or bench production?
Rebound that basketball! Rebound that basketball! Yeah, that for me, that was it right there. You know, the referees let him play, man. The refs let him play. They ate those whistles a lot, especially down low. It was a very, very physical contest. And the Suns needed to be more physical on the glass. And when I say more physical, I'm saying by a long shot. 52-28, they got beat on the glass. That just cannot happen.
Yeah, these are all concerning now that I look at it. Because, I mean, the Allen injury, if he's missing games or is ineffective, that hurts. The bench thing, I mean, that's not great. They were thoroughly dominated on the bench, but that can vary a little bit from game to game. I don't love that Anthony Edwards woke up and went off because, I was hoping you could delay that as long as possible. It was inevitable, but I was hoping he could delay it for at least a game or two in the series after the way you held him down in the regular season. But it's got to be the rebounding because I don't know that that's going to get a whole lot better. And so, yeah, I'm with you. 52-28 on the glass. That is rough.
Well, rebounding is in the lead, 38%. Bench production is second with 29%. Grayson Allen's injury is third, 22%. And Anthony Edwards' third quarter is fourth with 11%.
Nice.
All right. After seeing what you saw in Game 1 from the Suns, how do you think this series is going to end? Do you think the Suns still have a chance?
Yeah, I still think... I'm going to say this the way Wolf says this sometimes. Yeah, I think whoever wins Game 2 is going to win the series. I think if the Suns win it, then we're going to see them kind of get back on track a little bit. I mean, they're so inconsistent, it's hard to rely on anything. But I think if they win Game 2 and it's a best of 5 from that point on, and yeah, but if Minnesota goes up 2-0, I mean, I think at a certain point we got to be realistic. I was looking at this before. The Suns haven't been down by 2 games in a series very often since they started getting back into the playoffs in 21, but when they have, they've never won a series down 2 games.
Yeah, man. I think the Suns are going to bounce back in Game 2. I really do believe that. But let me just say this, brothers. If we don't see that, if we see the T-Wolves beat them and beat them by double digits once again, I will definitely question how long this series is going to go. I will definitely do that after 2 games. I need to see one more game. This is the bounce back game for the Phoenix Suns. We've seen them be inconsistent all season long. This would seem to get their attention and say, let's go and let's see how they play in Game 2.
Merrill Kelly was scratched from his start yesterday due to shoulder discomfort. He was examined by team trainers and sent home for an MRI. So hopefully we find out more about his status today. But the D-backs did beat the Giants 5-3 in their series finale. Here's Torrey Lovello after the game.
It feels unbelievable. This team is beat up, tired, dealing with some unforeseen circumstances, and they go out and win a huge game. And it just speaks volumes about this team's toughness, their ability to focus at the most critical times, and then close it out and win a game. It wasn't easy. Today was not an easy day. You know, you wake up and get the news on Merrill. I don't care what happens. It takes its toll on the team. And then what Slade did just kind of gave everybody a chance to catch their breath, and we went out and won a big game.
What is your concern level with Merrill Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, it's an arm, and it's a pitcher, so that's never great. At least it's not the elbow. But I just, they can't afford to not have Merrill Kelly. Even if they have everybody else, in my mind, they need Merrill Kelly. But they also don't have a lot of these guys. I will say this, Wolf, so far through these first 23 games, it has shown how much depth this team does have to still be right there around 500. Like, when the Suns had all the injuries earlier in the year, it was like, I don't know about their depth. The Diamondbacks have a ton of depth, but they just have an absurd amount of injuries now.
Yeah, you know what's up? I'm concerned. I have the furrowed brow. I'm not panicking. But Merrill Kelly is a guy that when he gets concerned, I get concerned. And, you know, I think he's mildly, with an emphasis on mildly, concerned. And that kind of concerns me.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Slightly more than mildly?
Because this guy is Farmer Brown, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, what concerns me is their next five games, three against St. Louis, two against Seattle. Right now, the set pitching matchups are Brandon Pfaadt. Who knows on Tuesday? Jordan Montgomery, Zach Gallen, and who knows on Saturday?
Yeah, there are some athletes, professional athletes, that just overreact to everything. Oh, my.
He's not one of them.
Oh, he's not one of them. And that's what has got my attention.
All right. And one more real quick for you guys. According to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport.
This isn't going to be quick, but go ahead.
Former Jets quarterback. And number two pick, Zach Wilson, has been is being traded to the Broncos. What is your reaction to this?
Now, we should throw in, it's the other part of the trade is just a very late pick swap. I think
yes,
it's
late round pick swap.
Seventh round.
Six for a seventh, and the Jets will pay some of Wilson's salary.
Just to get him out of there. I mean, well, based on the look on your face, I'm going to let you give your reaction instead.
No, I just wonder what is going on here. Is this the perfect opportunity for Sean Payton to say, I am a quarterback whisperer? Yes.
But they still need a quarterback, though, don't they?
Listen, Zach Wilson, when you look at him in terms of talent and you look at him in terms of first-round ability, he's got everything you need. Everything you could want. It's what lies within Zach Wilson. This would be the perfect opportunity for Sean Payton to show what kind of quarterback whisperer he is. The only thing that could ruin it is you drafting a quarterback in the first round coming up this Thursday to compete with Zach Wilson.
Dude,
see what happens.
The only fan base that might be meaner to Zach Wilson than the New York one would be the Broncos fans.
Really?
Yeah, you're going to bring your answer to not having a quarterback for a while is to bring in Zach Wilson. He better be good right out of the gate. This is not this. If you're Sean Payton, you don't get to do like your little passion project with quarterback of the Denver Broncos. That fan base is not going to stand for it.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, they got him for nothing. So
there's really no commitment. Right?
Right.
I still think they need a quarterback in the draft.
Okay, wow, that'd be really, really interesting. Can't wait to hear more on this. Can't wait to hear Sean Payton talk about Zach Wilson.
Well, I can't wait to hear from Kellen Olsen. Thanks for wolfing down your lunch there, Rick. Kellen Olsen's going to join us next to talk about his biggest takeaways from the Suns. Game one loss to the Timberwolves. Our own Phoenix Suns guru for Arizona sports is joining us next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
I just see you out there, Kellen.
I've talked to like 19 basketball people in 3 hours.
Arizona Sports, our Suns' mega mind, Kellen Olsen, joining Wolf and Luke to talk about the Phoenix Suns now.
As Kellen Olsen is still in Minnesota. It's almost like he lives there now. Kellen Olsen, it's only been a couple of days, really. He's joining us right now on the Arizona Sports Line as we get ready for Game 2 between the Suns and the Timberwolves tomorrow. Kellen, thanks for the time, man. How's Minnesota treating you?
Luke trying to manifest me being out of his life. Not happening, partner. You're stuck with me.
Well, you didn't hear we transferred you permanently to Minnesota. I don't know if that memo got through.
Nope, fake news. Stop it.
Killer, what have you been doing for the last 72 hours?
Watching a lot of basketball, watching both the Suns. I think I've watched the game back in total one time in person, another like time and a half back on video. Watched some other playoff games, went to Target Field last night, watched baseball. Doing well.
Oh, cool. I thought you were going to say you went to Target. I was like, wow, you're getting really detailed here. All right, so now you've watched this game 2.5 times, Kellen. Is there anything that you saw from that game that is going to be a problem all series for the Suns no matter what?
I wouldn't say no matter what, but the only two things that were a concern to me that I wasn't expecting, like I think all of us were – not expecting, that's the wrong way to put it, but we all knew Minnesota was going to be physical. Like, we knew that was going to be a concern coming in, but like seeing it, the game unfold, one was Edwards getting to 6 assists, and I believe 5 of those, if not all 6, were to an open 3-point shooter that knocked down the shot. If Edwards is able to set up shooters consistently, they're going to be in trouble in the series, and then if they are getting blown out in the Rudy Gobert minutes, they're going to be in trouble in the series as well, because I think the number I had in the recap was Gobert was a combined minus 68 and plus minus in the 3 Phoenix matchups in the regular season, and then he was plus 19 on Saturday. That's a matchup that Devin Booker usually just claim broils, but he didn't have it that night, and Minnesota did a really good job of pretty much eliminating him from the game as much as possible. So it's on the Suns now to counter there, tighten up their coverage on Edwards, and figure out how they can free up Book to go at Gobert.
Yeah, you know, Book, of course, 3 of 12 after 3 of 12 from the field after 3 quarters and 5 of 16 on the night overall, only 18 points. Any concern on Book and how he played?
No, not at all. I think that he hasn't had his best season this year in the regular season, but with that being said, it's playoffs, and he's always stepped up in the postseason. We saw it last year. We saw it 2 years ago. We saw it 3 years ago. Injuries have hindered him a bit at times in the postseason, but no, we're going to need to see at least another 2 games. I'm going to need to see like 3 straight games of him underperforming to start to even think about being concerned about the way he's playing.
We're talking to Kellen Olsen. Kellen, the physicality that Minnesota brings, again, like you said, not a shock by any means. It's a little bit different in the playoffs because you don't ever know how much they're going to let go or how much they're going to call. Do you feel like this Suns team, you've been around them all year, is wired to not get too caught up in the officiating while also, you know, kind of needing consistency from the officials as the series goes on against a team like this?
I think it just happens. I don't know how you interpret it. You guys interpreted the game. You guys had a different view of it than me, but I didn't really think they were getting on the officiating too much or it wasn't getting in their heads too much. We saw that affect the Suns team a ton 2 years ago. You'll remember that game in Sacramento where it seemed like Book and Chris Paul were talking to an official every single possession. I didn't really sense that, but they need to get on the same page. Those conversations are actually important right now because they need to figure out what they can kind of get away with. And that's the battle of when a game is ultra physical. There were only 3 total free throws in the first quarter, and then there were a ton more free throws in the last 3 quarters. So they're just trying to find that consistency with what they do. Book talked about that today and just how he watched his fouls back, and he's trying to figure out what exactly is okay and what isn't, because he thought he was, for the most part, sticking to what was okay. So they're going to need to figure out that balance, though, because if Minnesota is going to be the team benefiting from that on top of the physicality, then that's an issue because the Suns need to get to the foul line and they need to keep Minnesota away from it as well.
Killer, did you see anything from the regular season, the 3 regular season games that the Suns played against the T-Wolves? Did you see anything carry over to this playoff game from those 3 games?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I didn't really look at the game like that, if I'm being honest, because I threw the regular season mostly out of the window. It was just a previewing the series. It was important to address how much they had dominated it. But in terms of the carryover, not really. And I think something Minnesota did, and I think everyone should have expected them to really change some things up. Them putting Karl-Anthony Towns on Kevin Durant just completely changed the flow of the game because that gave the Suns a mismatch. And I'm sure when the Suns were passing the ball to Kevin Durant early in those situations, they were expecting double teams to come like right on the pass, but they weren't, because Minnesota was completely okay with keeping Anthony Edwards on Bradley Beal and Jaden McDaniels on Devin Booker and just like containing the two guys who keep the gears spinning the most in the offense. So they were okay with Kevin Durant getting those touches and slowing their movement down. And I think that was like the biggest change from those games. And it's going to be on the Suns to figure out how they can get those gears spinning again, because they had two of their best offensive performances of the season against this defense, but that team was nowhere to be found on Saturday.
Talking to Kellen Olsen. Kellen, Grayson Allen, the injury, it looks like at least up to this point, he's just questionable for tomorrow with the ankle issue. How would you handle this if you were the Suns? He wasn't effective really at all on Saturday before he got hurt, but he's been such a big part of what they're doing this season. But it is an ankle injury, and he's trying to play basketball. How would you manage this?
It would depend on how he feels about his ankle defensively, because if he can still move his feet to the standard that he wants to and go side to side, then he should be out there, because the way he helps their spacing alone, I've said it all year, he's sort of the barometer for how their offense is going. If he's having one of those nights where he got up like four shots and he missed all of them, that means the Suns' offense was not moving well, and we saw that all night. It was just not there at all. But defensively, if he's not able to move and his movement is compromised, that's going to be an issue, because Mike Conley was 2 of 12. He didn't have a good game. That's who Allen was guarding. But Conley was getting to his spots, and he was just missing some shots. So if they see Allen out there, they're going to see how he's moving early. And if he's not moving that great early, they are going to send Rudy Gobert up there to set a pick and roll for Mike Conley, and they're going to get that part of their offense going that they didn't show much of on Saturday either.
Killer, if the Suns lose game two, how concerning is that to you in regard to winning this series?
Depends on how they lose. If they lose the same way that they did on Saturday, I will be concerned, because that will mean that they didn't really make the necessary tweaks and adjustments that they should from a game-to-game basis. But if they lose a close game and there's nothing really, it's just one of those where they lost it narrowly on the road and they did a lot of things well, then I won't be that concerned. If they get blown up by 40 and it looks like that they just weren't mentally locked in, I'll be concerned. It just depends on how the game goes. Like, for example, game one, I'm not really concerned after game one. It was a one game sample size with a lot the Suns could do better, and Minnesota played extremely well. I expect Minnesota to play like that pretty much all series. But with that being said, the Suns have a lot of things now that they got one game under their belt and saw what this Minnesota team is really about that they can adjust and be more prepared for.
Kellen, you said you watched a lot of basketball this weekend. All eight series have started. The home team won all eight games. Did anybody in those other games really stand out to you as maybe a team that lost game one that could still come back and win the series, or anybody look dominant? What jumped out to you in the other seven series?
I really like the way New Orleans hung in there against Oklahoma City. I'm curious to see if Oklahoma City can get settled, because this is why we talk about playoff inexperience all the time, because they just spent that whole game trying to get settled in, and they weren't hitting enough threes and they weren't creating enough turnovers. And when they don't do that, they're not an elite team anymore, because that's pretty much what makes them elite. So I'm curious to see kind of how that goes, because New Orleans just didn't go away in that whole game. And if New Orleans can take a game that probably was their best shot at it, but if they can take a game or two here and then Zion gets back towards the back half of the series, all of a sudden we're talking about something. But nothing else really. I mean, the Nuggets just were like, oh, the Lakers are in this game. That's adorable. And then they just smoked them. Like, it's the Nuggets, you know. We've seen them like that forever at this point, it feels like.
Kellen, great stuff as always, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Killer.
Enjoy Minnesota.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Kellen Olsen joining us right there on the Arizona Sports Line. I'll say this. I was driving somewhere when the Nuggets-Lakers game was on.
Yeah.
So I was listening to the Nuggets broadcast of that game. They were very, very pro Nugget. I'll just put it that way.
Is that right?
Very pro. Every call. Well, they should probably challenge that. Well, the league wants the Lakers back in this game. Like, all right, look, I get it, guys. It's annoying to play the Lakers. I get it, but yeah. All right, we come back. If the Arizona Cardinals are going to trade back, probably won't happen until they are on the clock on Thursday night. We'll explain why next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey everybody, it's Bernsy, and the Suns could not contain Anthony Edwards in Game 1, and now Phoenix has some work to do if they're going to get back in this series. We'll give you all the big takeaways from the Game 1 loss, starting at straight up 2 o'clock on Arizona Sports.
All right, we are now 3 days away from the start of the NFL Draft, and we should bring this back up here for this conversation, Wolf, because it could potentially be relevant. That trade for Zach Wilson did happen. I know a lot of Broncos fans that are trying to pretend like it didn't happen, but in case you missed it, the Broncos, it was basically a 7th and 6th round pick swap between them and the Jets, and the Broncos also get Zach Wilson. So now they have Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham. I don't know what unstoppable looks like, but I'm guessing it's that.
Yeah, you know what? They still have to be in the market for a quarterback, right? They still have to be in the market for a quarterback. Even though you've got a guy that has all of the talent, every box you'd want to check for the most part in Zach Wilson, he's got it. There's just one problem. He's been a bust. And a major bust at that.
I mean, you can take him on. I think everything you were saying about Sean Payton before is valid, where Sean Payton might be like, yeah, okay, he's been a bust. He shouldn't have been the second overall pick. He really, at the time, it didn't feel like he should be the second overall pick, but whatever. But I'm sure if you're Sean Payton, you're looking and saying, they didn't know how to use him. I can get a lot more out of him. And that's great, and you have him, and you didn't really give anything up to get him.
Yeah.
But I don't know that you can wait a whole year to draft a quarterback just to make the path open for Zach Wilson.
I know, but it's got to be so tantalizing for Sean Payton.
Well, maybe he ends up being the guy.
Stop and think about it. Sean Payton, but you're not going to waste a first-round pick so he can sit down so Zach Wilson can go play.
But I can't waste a year waiting to see if it is
This is why, once again, Sean Payton, would you say Sean Payton, ladies and gentlemen, would you say most head coaches in the National Football League have a little bit of an ego?
Yeah.
No, they do.
Yeah.
Okay, they have to.
Yeah.
They've got a little bit of an ego right there, ladies and gentlemen. They do. Especially Sean Payton. He might have a little bit more.
I was going to say, he got somebody else's ego.
I'm just saying, so maybe Sean Payton, knowing he's the quarterback whisperer, as I whisper into the microphone.
Whisper.
Maybe just because he is that guy, maybe he'd love the opportunity to say, well, we just thought we'd give this a flyer. And we'll see how this goes, because I can rebuild him. Okay, so he can't do that, right? He can't. Even if he's that arrogant, he can't do that.
I mean, he could in the sense of, like, try to rebuild him. Guys get hurt. What was it, 64, 66 quarterbacks played last year? You draft a rookie, maybe he gets hurt and you have to go to Zach Wilson.
Right.
Maybe, I mean, the other part of this, and where we're getting is how this impacts the Cardinals. Maybe they just stay. What are they? They're picking in the teens. Maybe they just stay there and pick Bo Nix, and maybe Zach Wilson starts the first year and Bo Nix is the guy after. I don't know.
So who's picking in the teens? You're talking about Denver?
Denver picks 12.
Oh, yeah, they're number 12. Yes.
Yeah.
And then it's the Raiders at 13.
The Raiders pick 13.
Okay, good. So, yes. And the Minnesota Vikings at number 11.
Three teams all that the need Vikings. A quarterback.
Interesting. But I think when this news came down, brothers, I'm going to tell you right now, I thought, like, Sean Payton is arrogant enough to believe he could do this, right?
The look on your face was like it, you have a dog and you jingle the keys and the dog's like, what? What's going on over there?
But, you know, again, I think he is confident enough. Maybe arrogant is the wrong word. Confident enough in his own ability to take a guy like Zach Wilson, this piece of clay that he could possibly mold and suddenly shape it into something. Where, boy, would he get an awful lot of acknowledgement if, in fact, Zach Wilson was just serviceable.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think that's why the trade was made. I just don't know. And I don't really, I mean, if the Broncos want to not draft a quarterback I'm just going to watch their fan base lose their minds.
Okay.
Zach Wilson would have to win MVP this season to appease that fan base.
I think you're right about that. No, they have to be drafting. There they sit at number 12, ladies and gentlemen, the Denver Broncos. At number 12, look out for the Denver Broncos, too, by the way.
Yeah.
They could be desperate enough to do something crazy.
They should be
crazy.
More desperate than almost any of these teams. There's a story up on ESPN. It's just it's draft notes by Adam Schefter. And the first note he has is about the Arizona Cardinals. I'm not going to read you the whole thing, but I'll read you the opening couple sentences. It says, Arizona General Manager Monty Austin Ford has advertised with the number 4 overall pick. His team is open for business, but no sales are expected to be final until the Cardinals are on the clock. Austin Ford has told teams around the league that have inquired about trading up that he wants to wait until he is in position to pick before agreeing to any trade.
Yeah, why would you not do that? That would be my question right now. The Monty Austin Ford and the Arizona Cardinals are sitting in the catbird seat, ladies and gentlemen. They're sitting there at number four, and it looks good. And the reason being is because they can sit right there and they can draft a player that they absolutely love at number four. Maybe it is Marvin Harrison Jr. right there at number four. And we're going to be just fine with it if you don't meet what it is we're asking for. So you could see this. Why would you ever make a deal before the draft? We know the leverage is only going to go up once that clock starts ticking.
Yeah, especially in this position, the very next line of the story. A team always could try to outbid the market and lock in the selection now. You think Monty isn't saying that? Well, we're not going to make trades until we're on the clock. I mean, if you want to go crazy, maybe you can change my mind. But otherwise, we'll be sorting through this while we're on the clock.
Is Mike Ditka around right now? Yeah. You know, could we have Ditka pick up the phone and make a call? We'll give you every one of our draft.
How many picks do you got? Because that's we can start there if you want this pick beforehand. But the thing is, and this is where it gets a little bit difficult to expect a team to do that. We don't know a quarterback's going to be there at four. We just know a quarterback's going to be there at four. We know Caleb Williams is going one. Boy, that'd be a plot twist if the Bears went a different direction.
Oh my goodness.
Caleb Williams is going one. If you read into odds changing dramatically, because a lot of money's got to be bet for odds to change dramatically, J.J. McCarthy's odds to be picked second overall went from like, yesterday to he's getting picked second overall. That's how much the odds moved. I don't know how much you want to read into that, but so that would leave Drake May and Jaden Daniels for 3 and 4 in whatever order.
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels at 4, I think you'll get some calls.
I'm sorry, I just saw a kid running the combine up here.
The replay of the combine?
Even though it's over right here, right? Oh, no, actually, is it a pro day?
Oh, okay.
A pro day that is being run right here? Anyways, I saw a kid who was a corner run a 4.58, and I thought, oh, boy, he must be so disappointed. And he was. You could see the look on his face.
Well, when we walked in here, and I'll thank the NFL Network for ending it at 10, yeah. They were replaying the Santonio Holmes Super Bowl,
yeah,
but it was ending right as you and I were walking in here. So Bickley and Murata were stuck watching it, but thankfully they ended that right at 10 o'clock. All right, so when we come back, where did the Phoenix Suns let Game 1 slip away? We'll dive into that next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, all in for the Suns in the playoffs.
Listen up, Suns fans. Here is your Phoenix Suns code word of the day. It's Nash, as in former two-time MVP Steve Nash. So text Nash, N-A-S-H, to 620-620 right now and enter your info, and you could be heading to a Suns home playoff game. Tune into the Burns and Gambo show today during the 3 o'clock hour for your next Suns code word. Again, our keyword is Nash, 620-620.
Nice.
All right, down 0-1 in this series, Wolf. It's not the end of the series, obviously. They were down 0-1 to the Clippers last year and came back and won that series against L.A. Anything can happen over the course of a series, certainly. But the Suns did lose Grayson Allen in that game yesterday. We'll see if and how long he's out for. Devin Booker didn't have a good game. Grayson Allen didn't have a good game. He missed every shot. Eric Gordon missed every shot. Not great. Whereas Minnesota got to play pretty much the exact game that they wanted to play, and that results in the Suns being down after a 25-point loss in Game 1. In your mind, what was the worst part of this?
Yeah, you know, for me, based on Ian's, it came out and the referees let both teams know this was going to be a very, very physical series. Game one, and the physicality was there. We all know the postseason, of course. It gets more physical. The game slows down a little bit. But it seemed like, to me, they were eating a lot more whistles. Dudes were running into each other. Bodies were hitting the floor, Luke. They let them play. And especially down low, I thought they let them play.
Yeah. No, they did. And I don't mind that. It probably doesn't work in the Suns' favor in this series, but you said it earlier. I mean, who's tuning into the playoffs to watch guys shoot free throws? It's a part of the game, and if I'm playing, I realize I need to do that to get points, whatever. Like, I understand it's part of the game, but I would rather they let them play. But the biggest thing to me is that it's got to be consistent. We had Kellen Olsen on about a half hour ago, and we were talking about the physicality in the series and how it's going to be officiated. And he's like, yeah, I mean, as a team, you have to have those conversations now. You've played the first game. You've seen how it's officiated. The Suns are going to spend, I'm sure they spent yesterday, they're going to spend today and even tomorrow before the game, adapting to that, because Minnesota's a physical team. So you now know what is allowed and what isn't allowed. I can't imagine anything is more frustrating to a coach than if game one is officiated one way and game two is officiated completely differently. After you spent the break between one and two telling your team to do something because game one was officiated one way.
Yeah.
So the officiating has to be consistent now going forward.
No, you're right about that. And that's the thing that always concerns you as well, because sometimes that's not the way that it works right there. You know, if you just are consistent, that is exactly all you can ask for if you're a professional athlete in a game. I don't care what sport you're playing. Any game that is officiated or the referees or anything, you have to trust these guys to be professional and to go about their business and do it in a consistent way. And when you don't, man, that can really make you unsettled. It can, Luke.
Yeah.
You know, you don't even know what a strike zone is anymore for a hitter. Can you imagine how discombobulating that would be? Or if you're out there and you're not holding a guy and yet you're getting called for holding penalties again, just how bad that is and how that impacts you when you think you're just doing your job and people are throwing flags on you. It can really mess you up mentally, and it goes for any sport whatsoever. The only thing you can ask of officiating is that you are consistent.
Especially in basketball, because you're right, it goes for any sport, but in basketball it is so directly, hey, we're going to give this guy basically two free points, and we could do it over and over again over the course of the game, and it's not a concern of mine in the sense that, like, I thought it was bad in game one. I didn't really think it was bad in game one. My low-key concern level is just, you've, as officials, you've said you can get away with all this. So if the Suns get into weird foul trouble in the first half tomorrow, are they going to start to lose their cool? Like, hopefully that's just not the case. Hopefully the Suns get to play their game. Hopefully it's officiated the same way, because the Suns and Timberwolves have probably adjusted to that.
Yeah.
And let's see the players decide it.
Yeah, and I totally understand why they do this in the postseason. I do. Nobody wants to watch a free throw fest, right? You don't want to watch that. Oh, this team had 40 free throw attempts.
Yeah.
You know, really?
Awesome.
Do you really want that? Oh, the only thing worse than that, Basinonians, is having superstars in foul trouble, so they're sitting on the bench and they only play 27 minutes in the game.
Yeah.
That's the only thing. To the NBA and Adam Silver, that is the only thing that is worse than that situation, which is one of the reasons why the game does change as much as it does. And by the way, I'm in favor of that. I really am. Listen,
I'm fine with this.
As long as you're consistent.
As long as you're consistent. That's the biggest thing. Because, I mean, even just watching the first game, like, the Suns really can't afford. They have guys on this team that can't afford to get into foul trouble. Like, Nurk gets into foul trouble, would it? They get out, rebound the Suns 70-10. Like, you can't really afford to have him in foul trouble. As we're talking, and we're like, okay, well, which player is most likely to be in that position if it's officiated suddenly differently and tighter on Tuesday? I mean, my thought immediately goes to Booker. So this, you just, I don't want officiating to be an issue in this series, and hopefully it won't be. The Suns had other issues, certainly, on Saturday. The officiating wasn't an issue on Saturday. This is Kevin Durant on the team just missing a lot of layups.
Yeah, we just got to be more focused and finish those plays, and I think we will.
And KD on Anthony Edwards' trash talk. Anthony Edwards likes to talk trash, and he did it all game.
Yeah, just basketball. Not even play. It's just hoop, you know? You get hot, you make shots, make tough shots. You know, you're going to feel excited about yourself. So it's on me to keep coming back and showing them a tough look, or whoever's defending these guys, to show them a tough look. If they make shots over us, we move back to the next play, you know, and we move on to the next play, you know? So, he got it going. He made some tough ones. You just got to live with it. You got to live with it and be better next game.
KD is just listening to KD, man. He makes everything sound so much better, doesn't he?
He is he so level-headed with stuff.
He's like, dude, what are you stressing for, bro?
It's just hoop.
What is going on,
man? It's just hoop. Everything's just hoop.
Look, it's going to be okay, man. This is going to be fine.
But he's seen it all.
Do, bro.
He has absolutely seen it all. I'm trying to find the cut, and I don't know, maybe I don't have it, of Anthony Edwards after the game, because he was talking all game. But then when they talked to Anthony Edwards, he was like, this is great. Like, Kevin Durant's my favorite player. This is awesome. I get to go out there and yell at him. And like, look, he was just all over it.
I'm just saying right now, if you played a football game, never played in a playoff game, okay? But I'm just telling you right now, a regular season football game, if you got out physicaled in the first half, do you have any idea how many dudes going to be screaming at halftime? Do you have any idea?
All of them?
Challenging each other to go out and be more physical. You know, this is what is amazing about this. You know, KD's just like, hey, bro, don't worry. We lost game one. We're going to come back. We're just going to keep working. We're going to keep going about our business. This is what we're going to do, right? I mean, if you come in even a half, the first half is over and you got your butt kicked on the line of scrimmage, you got out-physicaled by your opponent, there's going to be dudes. There's going to be a lot of bad words being said, and they're going to be screaming at each other, and some dudes might be jaw-to-jaw. That's the game.
That is the game
of football, man. It's so different. I love it.
That was Kevin Durant's 167th playoff game. So when you say, yeah, KD's probably seen it all. Yeah, that's two additional NBA seasons just of playoff games that Kevin Durant has played in right there.
I mean, I would not have done well in the Suns locker room.
No, probably not.
I freely admit that.
And there's 82 of those games, too. Like, why is Wolf losing his mind? It's game 25 out of 82, and we're down two at halftime.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I played the right sport.
Yeah, I think, yes, that's the understatement of the year. Here's Bradley Beal talking about the defensive matchups that Minnesota presented. You got to remember, Minnesota, one of the best defensive teams in the NBA all season long, so that is going to be a challenge all series.
I mean, I think I played efficiently. I think obviously maybe a little bit more aggressive.
Okay.
But I think we were more or less matchup hunting tonight and just trying to take advantage of them hiding guys, and I think they actually went bigger and put Cat and Nas on KD, and Ant was guarding me to start the game, and it wasn't Conley, so they were trying to avoid, you know, the small mismatches with Conley as much as possible, and just keep size on size or just bigger defenders on us three, you know, and they did a good job of doing that. But you know, we have to be a lot better. I think in the first half we were really good. First quarter anyway, we were really good at moving bodies and moving the ball, and even I think in the beginning of the third, like just getting stops, getting out of transition, really got us back in the game.
It does. Even him talking right there, you know, you could put Jaden McDaniels on Booker, you can put Anthony Edwards on Bradley Beal, because Mike Conley on Bradley Beal wasn't working earlier in the season. You could throw Karl Anthony Towns or Naz Reid on Kevin Durant. It's almost like defensively, Minnesota can still have maybe not a big three, but like because you have Jaden McDaniels, you kind of have just like a defensive specialist. It sort of underscores the fact that the Suns don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. They used to have it with Mikal Bridges. Hey, we're going to put Mikal on that guy, and we're not going to see that guy for 2 weeks.
Yes.
With the Suns now, it's like, well, what? Is Kevin Durant your best defender? I mean, he's also doing 74 other jobs. And so it's different. And we all knew it was different, but you kind of see it on the other side of the court. Minnesota has a couple defensive guys they can throw on you to just shut you down. When we come back, you think the Suns are going to be able to bounce back in game two? We'll get into that next. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.